He held out his glass and almost lilted. "You know, Mr. Jeffries, I am at that blessedly tranquil point where the question is no longer when and whether to die, but how and with whom." I said, "Die with no one. If you truncate someone's life too early, she will perhaps not be ready to meet you anyway in the afterlife. You must wait for her there. It's all that question of maturity. You can't marry yet someone's little future ghost." I thought of Ruth's wistful Tregear apparition. Claire had said that when she had left Mount Druitt, Charlotte had been playing, still bossy and lively with survived trauma, in Ruth's backyard with her cousins. Smith caressed both the women and tilted Quentin's face up like his glass. "Is that true? You are not old enough, my darling." The thin, trim Marseille assassin with the vicious, cynical geriatric soul seemed at once as young as the tender face his hand was holding. His grip was not a claw anymore. He could relax. His final business double cross was a smooth success. His perfect young mistress adored him, and the barbarians waited armed and drunken at the gates. But Quentin did adore him, that was the problem. That was an appalling coincidence. She had dealt efficiently in death, appraised and profited from its successful playthings, and she was in love with someone who was as lonely for her as she was for him, and who had no other choice now but to die. If she did not die with him, she knew, as I did watching, that she faced a lifetime of unfading grief, as unending as Claire's guilt and grieving for her brother and sisters. It was Claire who should come to her now. But perhaps even for that reason Smith could not allow it. Ninel stirred, restless with stylized jealousy, and the gaze between Quentin and Smith was broken. I poured them more champagne like a persistent waiter. Claire rang again on the Langley phone. She said, "The Ukrainian mercenaries have arrived. They're getting on okay with the Australians, but they can't hold their liquor either. They all work together in Syria and Yemen, but there's bound to be some friction soon. The Ukrainians are definitely planning to kill Quentin, and the Australians are working out how to save her. The only thing they'll still agree about is destroying Smith, but they don't want to antagonise the Russians." I asked the vital question. "Do you know where the Saudis are on this now? If they're still trying to outbid Russia for the diamonds, Smith is safe." Smith was listening intently. "But if not, the only protection he has is Russia." Smith interpolated gently, "They are still trying to outbid each other." Samir nodded, gliding shyly from the kitchen with a tureen of golden fried potatoes. I had never actually eaten solid food with champagne before, but the flavours were quite compatible. When we had finished the potatoes, Smith stood up. He was still holding his champagne glass. Samir was holding the simplest of weapons, a small gel-ignite stick bomb with a detonator under his thumb and forefinger. It was clear from his comprehensive glances that he would detonate it if anyone moved. They didn't. Samir said, "There is a helicopter outside in the meadow. Mr. Smith can come with me and bring the diamonds. This is what I have been told to do. I am sorry." He was more than sorry. He was distraught. Claire rang again with her usual awkwardly psychic timing. I said, "Mr. Smith was wrong about the Saudis. They're out of the bargaining contest and into the kidnapping, larceny and torture competition. Mr. Smith is about to be subjected to extraordinary rendition.